Welcome to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay. My guest is Hannah Gable, Literary Director of the Texas Book Festival. The Texas Book Festival began with a simple purpose, to bring authors and readers together in a celebration of literature and literacy. It was founded in 1995 by Laura Bush, Mary Margaret Farabee, and a dedicated group of volunteers. The first festival took place in November of 1996 and is now one of the nation's premier annual literary events, featuring 300 authors of the year's best books and drawing 50,000 book lovers. And Hannah, welcome to Diverse Voices Book Review.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
And congratulations for becoming the literary director this year. So how does it feel to be so immersed in what I consider one of the great literary organizations in the country?
It's an honor. I am a huge book lover. I have been my entire life. And I came from the event planning world. So prior to Texas Book Festival, I worked in corporate event planning for years. So this role really is the perfect marriage of my professional experience with corporate events and my passion for books and storytelling and uplifting authors. So I'm really excited to be a part of the organization.
And of course, you're a native Austinite who is the founder of the book blog and social community Bookmark Party, which enabled you to connect with authors, publishers, and fellow book lovers around the world. So getting to the Texas Book Festival, what is the date of the Texas Book Festival? Where will it be? And what can you share about the festival? Because I know who's coming is always a secret until we sort of reveal it.
Absolutely. So this year's festival is going to be held on November 11th and 12th. So that does overlap with Veterans Day. So that's the first time, at least as far as I know, that we've overlapped with Veterans Day. So we are going to be working with the Veterans Day Parade in order to collaborate, since we're going to share some of the same footprint and make sure we have some tie-ins for Veterans Day and recognize all those incredible efforts of the people that are not only doing the parade, but also feature some books by veterans and focus on military issues. So we'll have some panels to kind of tie in Veterans Day. But other than that, it's going to be fully in person, kind of the same old thing you guys are used to. And we're expecting about 250 to 300 authors. And as you mentioned, we usually have about 40 to 50,000 attendees. So we're expecting that same attendance and it's going to be awesome.
So you are a native Austinite. So when did you first become aware of the Texas Book Festival?
So I remember going as a child. Sadly, in recent years, I was out of town every time I would have had the opportunity to go once it finally was back in person after COVID. Although I guess that was only really 1 year and then there was a hybrid festival. But I'm really excited to not only get to attend this year, but to play such a large role in programming and inviting authors. And it's really just such an incredible organization. And since I started in this role, I've just been incredibly just awed at how much such a small staff is able to accomplish.
So how do you go about choosing the books for the book festival? I can tell you from the Diverse Voices Book Review side, I probably get 50 emails a week about books, and I can only do two or three interviews a month. So I can imagine that there are a lot of authors that want to be part of the Texas Book Festival, but you have to make a decision. So talk a little bit about that process.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's something that we put a lot of thought into, and we do receive hundreds, if not thousands, of submissions depending upon the year. So it is very difficult to narrow it down. As I mentioned, we typically feature 250 to 300 authors, which is quite a few. However, that includes everything from children's picture books to cookbooks, just the whole entire gambit of literature. We want to have something for everyone at this festival. So all those submissions, 250 to 300 authors, includes all the different genres. But when it comes to what we're looking for, as I mentioned, we do want to have something for everyone. However, we take into consideration a lot of things when considering books. One of the things is the quality and the content of the book. Is it something that is going to resonate with an audience? And is it an author that the audience is already familiar with? I think that certainly plays a role. However, we also want to uplift new authors, and we want to give new authors a chance to feature their books and reach new audiences. So the content of the book is also something that we really consider. And I have a number of selection committees, one of which you are on. So lucky to have you. But yeah, it's really important to have a diverse group of community members, board members. Our selection committees are made up of published authors, scholars, just people who are experts in different areas to help us determine which books really need to be featured at the festival. And you know, that goes for everything from children's picture books to science books and fiction, adult fiction, YA, and everything in between. So I think our process is really just trying to read as many of the books as we possibly can and doing our research to make sure that the authors we're featuring are not only going to be of interest to our audience, but also going to be interesting speakers and make for interesting conversation, because ultimately that's what we're here to do, is inspire conversations and talk about storytelling and help authors connect with readers.
Well, one of the reasons I have stayed connected with the Texas Book Festival for so long is its true commitment to diversity. So whether you're looking at the board of directors, whether you're looking at the author selection committees, Texas Book Festival has really been committed to make sure we have a wide variety of culturally diverse voices that help to direct and provide input on where the Texas Book Festival goes.
Absolutely. And that's certainly something that I am very focused on this year. And I think the festival in general has always been focused on. But we do, you know, once again, going back to having something for everybody, Texas is a very diverse state. And we want to make sure that not only does everybody that's attending find something that will interest them, but it's just so important to consider all the different perspectives that are represented throughout literature. And, you know, I'm a big believer in the more you read outside of what you know, and the more you read from people that come from different backgrounds than you or have different life experiences than you, the more you can understand and empathize with the world around you. You know, I've always said if more people are avid readers, the world would be a much more compassionate place. And I think a large part of that is just reading diversely and learning to understand the people that are different from you and the issues that various people struggle with. And, you know, we want that represented at the festival. We want to talk about all different kinds of issues, and we don't want to stray away from things that, you know, might be controversial. You know, our footprint is within the Capitol part of it. However, we do also have tents and offsite venues outside of the Capitol. So, you know, some people, especially when I met with publishers earlier in the spring, we did get a lot of questions about if there were certain topics we wouldn't cover given just the state of Texas politics and kind of what's going on at the state legislature. And, you know, our answer was no. We do have to be a little bit careful with what we program in the Capitol, because we do want to be respectful, and we also want to make sure that authors are comfortable with where they're speaking and what they're speaking on. But we really do want to tackle all the different issues and do it in a way that both the authors and the audience members feel comfortable in attending those discussions.
So talk a bit about the visit with publishers. That had to be an amazing experience, visiting with so many different publishers, talking about the authors they think would be a good fit for the Texas Book Festival.
Yeah, absolutely. So we went, so by we, I mean, myself, our at the time Deputy Director Dahlia Azeem, and Lois Kim, who was the Executive Director at the time. Lois has sadly since left us, and Dahlia is now the Interim Executive Director. However, the three of us went to New York and met with the Big Five, as well as a few kind of more indie press publishers. And it was so incredible not only to see their offices, which are just, you know, stacked in beautifully displayed bookcases. Sadly, a few of them are under construction, which was a little bit of a bummer in terms of photo ops, but it was really great to see where all the work is done and to physically meet with the people that are helping promote these books. We mostly met with publicists, so we weren't meeting with, you know, the editors or the authors themselves, but the publicity teams are the ones that are really determining the tour dates and getting the authors out there, as I'm sure you know. So we spent 4 days in New York, and I think we did about 30 meetings, which was kind of insane. we were constantly running behind, and it was just kind of a whirlwind, but it was really incredible to not only meet the people that are getting these authors out into the world and making sure their books are getting read and purchased by potential consumers, but I don't know. I think one of the things that I found most interesting was our first couple of meetings. I was like, wow, like this imprint has the best authors I could possibly think of. And then it's like the next one that's just kind of the same feeling with each meeting. And, you know, part of publicist jobs is making sure that their authors sound like the greatest authors there are. And they really do a good job of that, at selling the people that they want to promote. But no, it really was incredible to not only learn about the books that they have published, you know, so we talked about both books that had already come out in 2023 and then books that are coming out later in the year. So our festival tends to focus on books that are coming out kind of in the second half of the year. So we tend to focus on books coming out in the fall so we can piggyback off of fall tour dates that publishers are already planning for their authors, just because we are a nonprofit and we unfortunately don't have a huge budget to, you know, pay for author travel and accommodation. So focusing on fall books allows us to, once again, you know, piggyback off of those existing tour dates and kind of sneak into the publisher's budgets. So some of our discussions revolved around who would kind of make the most sense regarding when the books were coming out. And, you know, again, there's always a consideration made for whether or not the authors have some sort of connection to Texas, or if the books, you know, focus on topics or are based somewhere that would kind of resonate with a Texas audience. So that is something that we do take into consideration. But I think my biggest takeaway just from all those meetings was just one, being so grateful that I get to be in a job where I am literally getting paid to go meet with Penguin Random House and HarperCollins and, you know, all these incredible, you know, well-respected publishers that are publishing some of my favorite books. So just really grateful that I get to be involved in this literature world, this literary world, of book lovers. But also I think it's just really incredible to kind of see a little bit behind the scenes, how they go about promoting the books and, just some marketing and like the publicity machine of really getting these books out into the world is honestly incredible. And most of the publicists we met with work on so many different books. So it's just, I don't know. I really admire their work, and it was just really fun to spend an entire week, you know, running around New York talking about books.
So now that you've been with the Texas Book Festival a few months, you've talked about getting the opportunity to visit the publishers. You've talked about learning how so few people do so much work to put the Texas Book Festival on and the other events that they do and programs that they have on a regular basis. What are some other things that you learn about the Texas Book Festival or about the book industry that has gotten you really excited that you didn't realize prior or know about prior to joining the Texas Book Festival?
Yeah, so one thing I do want to mention, just because I think it's a common misconception, one that's kind of come up as we've been doing interviews for, we've recently hired two new staff members, and right when I came on, we were starting interviews, and it seems to be a common misconception that the Texas Book Festival mostly features Texas authors. And of course, we want to make sure we feature incredible authors in our community, but we also feature a ton of authors that are both based nationally and even some international authors. So from year to year, I would say we typically have anywhere from 20 to 40% Texas authors, and the rest are flying in or driving in from other parts of the country or the world. So that's just one thing I did want to mention, because that's a question I do tend to get a lot. I think just in terms of what I've learned since I started in the role, I mean, it's definitely given me a really incredible behind the scenes look at how the publishing industry works. And, you know, just talking about those New York meetings and meeting with publishers and kind of just seeing how that whole machine works has been really eye opening. But also I think it's just been just really gratifying to be a part of an industry and a organization that our entire mission is to uplift authors and to connect readers and authors. And to me, that just is the whole reason that I started my book blog was to introduce readers to new authors and start important conversations. And I think this role has really given me the opportunity to take that goal to the next level and to interact with, you know, really important authors and publishers and bring them, or at least try to convince them to come to Texas and speak to our audiences. So it's been really, really gratifying. And I think every day brings something new, and just kind of learning how to send proposals to really well-known authors and their teams, trying to get them to come to the Texas Book Festival has been really kind of a learning curve, but also has been a really interesting experience. And while I cannot yet mention any of the big name authors we have in store, I am happy to report that we've already secured a handful of really incredible headliners that I think people are going to be really excited about.
So let's get to know Hannah Gable. So you're a native Austinite, but you went to Boston University and you had a double major. Advertising and history, they seem kind of incongruent. Talk about your desire to major both in advertising and history.
Yeah, absolutely. So I definitely wanted to get out of the Austin bubble when I graduated from high school. Most of my friends were going to UT, A&M, TCU, all the Texas schools. I didn't even apply to a single Texas school. I just was really anxious to get out of the bubble, go spread my wings and go somewhere new. And I really liked the idea of being in a big city. So that's why I chose Boston. New York was a little bit too big. I did consider NYU, but BU is kind of just the perfect size. But yeah, in terms of my majors, I just honestly had no idea what I wanted to do at, you know, 18 years old. I don't know. I think I know very few people who actually did know what they wanted to do at that age. So,
well, I got to stop you there. But did you think you knew what you wanted to do? Because I can tell you what I wanted to do at 18, and that has changed completely. Did you think you knew what you wanted to do?
No, I had absolutely no idea. I had applied to the School of Communications because I thought that was probably, you know, something in there was something that would make sense. Marketing, I didn't know. Just something in there sounded like, okay, I could do that. And when it came time to actually declare a major, I was trying to decide between PR and advertising. And I chose advertising because the intro to advertising class was later. And I didn't want to have to get up at 8 a.m. to go to intro to PR. So that's how I chose my major. Having absolutely no idea what I was doing with my life. And kind of once I got started, I realized, all right, this is, you know, interesting, but it kind of just felt like a lot of what I was learning was more or less common sense, just kind of packaged in like what was supposed to kind of make advertising seem more scientific than it perhaps actually is. And as somebody who's just very outgoing, and I don't know, I feel like I just have kind of natural common sense. A lot of what I was learning just kind of bored me. So that's why I decided to add the history major, because I've always been very interested in history. And I just wanted something more academic to make me feel like I was learning something that, even though I didn't intend to pursue a career in history, I just wanted something that would kind of help further my knowledge base as a human being and expose me to just, I don't know, interesting things that would be valuable beyond college and just learning about the world around me. And I think, you know, history is so important to where we go in the future. And I just, I don't know, that was honestly, those are my favorite classes I took in school, or the history classes. And for some reason, I was particularly interested in Russian history. And so
I was
going to
ask you about that. So are you watching the Hulu series about Catherine the Great?
I have watched the first season, but I'm not caught up. I'm actually really glad you mentioned that, though, because I just recently was like, I need something good to watch. And I had totally forgotten about it. But yeah, no, it's a fun show.
So Russian history, so does that affect, like, did you say, I'm going to go back and read War and Peace, I'm going to go back and read Crime and Punishment, sort of that intersection between the literature of Russia and the history of Russia. Did you all of a sudden have a desire to read Russian novels?
You know, I really didn't, but I think in college, I just kind of lost my spark for leisure reading just because I was so consumed with doing all the readings that were required of me as a student. You know, and I think that's pretty common with both college students and high school students, at least from people that I've talked to in recent years. But I don't know, I just really loved learning about just the kind of Soviet culture and just the atrocities that happened, but also just kind of the warped frame of mind that led to.
So it was more contemporary, more 20th century, 19th, 20th century Russia, red Russia, white Russia, what happened to Lenin, Trotsky, and all those guys.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, I definitely think in college, I just kind of didn't really make the time for leisure reading because when I wasn't studying and doing my readings for school, I was, you know, off being social and going to parties and doing that whole thing. So I feel like it wasn't until after college that I really reconnected with my love of leisure reading and kind of rediscovered how important that is to me.
All right, so I'm going to put you on the spot here, though I did kind of tell you early this morning that I want you to talk about books you love. So coming out of college, when you began loving leisure reading again, are there any books that just really captured your attention?
Yeah, so I mean, I guess I'll start off by saying that my favorite book of all time is The Alchemist, just because it is.
Love that book.
Yeah, I mean, there's just, I feel like you could turn to any page and there's a quote that is worthy of, you know, hanging up somewhere in your home because it's just so inspirational and it's just so, you know, so many themes that are so relevant to the human experience and just, you know, pursuing your personal legend, as he puts it, and pursuing, you know, what feels right to you and making the most of the life that we're given. So that book is one that I try to read once a year just to kind of remind myself, especially if I'm kind of, you know, having a tough time. I feel like one that almost serves as like a self-help book and like a boost of self-esteem while also being a literary masterpiece. But I think kind of right out of college, I did what a lot of young people do and kind of was having a bit of a quarter life crisis and spent about 2 years reading exclusively self-help books. So
I remember that phase. I did too.
Yeah. It's funny. One of our new staff members that just started mentioned that she's mostly been reading self-help books and, you know, she's in her early 20s. And I was like, I did that too. You're just, that I feel like that's
all right,
just
now you know, I'm going to put you on the spot because I'm thinking how to win friends and influence people, see you at the top, think and grow rich. So which was your favorite self-help book?
Yeah. So it's going to sound really lame now because when I go back and read excerpts from it now, I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is so cheesy. But one of the first ones I read and I felt like really resonated with me at the time was You Are a Badass by Jen Cisneros, which, you know, it does what it needs to do. And
let's show some love for that because I think books are meant for you at that time. So that even though now so you look at it, this is the wise experience, Hannah.
Yes.
But you weren't the same level of wisdom and experience when you first read that book, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I think that is the power of self-help books is being able to meet you where you are. And at that time, that book absolutely did for me. And, you know, I also read a lot of Brené Brown at that time, and her books really resonated with me as well. The Gifts of Imperfection was one that I still recommend to a lot of people and found really, really valuable just because I think, especially when you're young, there's this kind of quest to, you know, do what's expected of you and fit into this kind of box of trying to be perfect. And I think that book really kind of helped me to realize that, no, perfect's actually not only unattainable, but it's also unrelatable. And, you know, people don't like perfect people because it makes them feel less adequate in their own existence. So I think that was a really kind of important thing that came out of my self-help journey.
That's very cool. Very cool. So let's talk about Bookmark Party. What inspired you to launch that social website and the experience? What was it?
Yeah, so it was definitely COVID angst, I would say. Just being stuck at home like everyone else and having no idea what to do with myself. I was actually in a unique position because I know a lot of people unfortunately lost their jobs in 2020. I actually had left my job in 2019 prior to the pandemic. I think I mentioned when we started this interview that I was in corporate event planning prior to joining the Texas Book Festival. And, you know, I kind of reached a point where I felt like I had done everything I could do at my current company. I'd been there for 6 years. So I put in my notice, my lease was ending. I put all my stuff in storage. I sold my car and I booked a one-way flight to Tokyo, and just kind of up and quit my life. Was traveled across Asia and Australia by myself, did the whole backpacking, staying in hostels thing, for several months. And fortunately I did that pre-COVID. However, right when I got back, I was interviewing for event roles and, you know, the week everything shut down, I was supposed to be flying out to Amazon for a final interview with them, to work at their headquarters doing events. And needless to say, that did not happen. So I kind of took a few months to just, you know, pout at my parents' house, where I was staying. And I realized I was going to have to rely on some of my other professional skills because events didn't seem to be coming back anytime soon. With COVID just kind of compounding and getting worse and worse at that time. And so I not only started Bookmark Party, but I started HLG Creative, which was my graphic design and freelance company, which I actually still am running, but just in a far smaller capacity at this point in time, now that I have a full-time job to focus on. But I feel like Bookmark Party was both kind of a creative outlet to just experiment with different graphic design capabilities, both for my work with HLG Creative and also just like a way to experiment with social media marketing, since that was also something I was offering as a service with my freelance business. But it also was just a way for me to share book recommendations and reviews because with, again, everybody stuck at home, my friends and family kept asking me like, oh, what are you reading? Because they knew I was such an avid reader. And rather than repeat myself a million times, I was like, oh, well, just go check out this Instagram I made or go look at the website and read my latest book reviews. So it really started as a way to just share reviews and recommendations with the people in my network and friends and family. And I really had no idea when I started it that there was already this whole, you know, Bookstagram community on Instagram, where people like me talk about books and, you know, receive books from publishers to talk about them online. I didn't even know that was a thing. So as I started kind of learning more about the kind of online book community, I met a lot of really incredible fellow book bloggers, many of whom I've actually met in person and have become friends with in real life at this point, which is kind of cool. But yeah, I just kind of continued to grow my account and kind of realized that there was a lot more need for that type of information, than I perhaps initially realized. And I also think, you know, part of my success with that was once again, just people being stuck at home during COVID and being like, okay, I'm going to read more. And what do I read? And my account, I think just really made it easy for people to not only find books that would interest them, but you know, unlike a lot of book accounts or book blogs that perhaps focus on a certain niche, like, you know, romance or thrillers or kind of generic commercial fiction, I really try to capture a little bit of everything. And that's kind of more just a reflection of how I read. I really enjoy reading something from all different kinds of genres. So everything from, you know, scientific nonfiction and explorations of social science to memoirs and sci-fi and
so let me jump in here real quick. So how many books a month do you read, roughly?
Per month, I typically read 8 to 10. So I typically read about 100 books a year.
Okay. And so, are there times when you feel that you need to take a break from reading? Seriously?
You know, yes. However, now that I'm in this job that I'm in, I feel like I sort of have more pressure on me than ever to read as much as possible as quickly as possible.
So are you saying you're going to read 200 books this year then?
I mean, I wouldn't count on that, but I wouldn't be surprised if I, you know, clock in over 100. But yeah, I mean, I do think that with both, even just with Bookworm Party, before I started at the Texas Book Festival, I did kind of feel this pressure to like read as much as possible so that I had new recommendations to share with my audience. And now that kind of pressure is more just reading as many submissions as possible to make sure that I'm properly, you know, vetting and, you know, looking at all the incredible authors and books that are submitted for the Texas Book Festival. So I spend a lot of time reading, and at some point I feel like I need to read less so I can have a little bit more of a life.
So let me ask you this. So, what books recently, let's say this year, one or two books that you just fell in love with?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I could have a whole hour long conversation with you just about that, but, I would say within the last year, a few of the books that have stuck with me the most, one I think I've mentioned to you before is Babel, which is by R.F. Kuang, and is just an incredible, quite long, but a really interesting cross-genre book that is both historical fiction and fantasy. And it explores the structures of power and colonialism and
Of colonialism. It's critique of the British Empire and what they did.
The building of empires and how they're able to do what they did at the expense of so many other people. And I don't know, I just think that book had so much incredible social commentary while also building in a really fascinating fantasy subplot. But yeah, so that book I highly recommend. Also speaking of R.F. Kuang, her latest book, Yellow Face, came out in May, which I also read and really enjoyed. Unlike Babel, it is not fantasy. It is a satirical fiction book, which features a white woman stealing the work of her recently deceased Asian American frenemy and publishing it as her own. And the book is just kind of infuriating. It's one of those books that makes you feel a lot of different emotions because the protagonist is absolutely insufferable. However, it is a really interesting inside look at the publishing industry and also like a scathing takedown of the publishing industry and just specifically like the tokenism and kind of the just various inequity, I would say, of the publishing industry and kind of who is able to rise to the top and who is given the opportunity to rise to the top. So that's another one that I really, really enjoyed recently. Also R.F. Kuang. Let's see what else. I really love Brendan Slocum. I know I also spoken to you about him in the past. His first debut novel, The Violin Conspiracy, came out last year, which was a mystery thriller, but also just a really interesting character development story about a young Black boy who rises to prominence in the world of classical music, which is a very white dominated industry. And along the way loses his priceless violin and has to recover it. His latest novel, Symphony of Secrets, just came out in April. And kind of similar to his previous book, it also takes place in the world of classical music. And I think the reason I found Symphony of Secrets so interesting is it was just really cool to see how much the author grew as a writer between his first and second book. And you know, this book is also a mystery and kind of character study. And also kind of like Yellowface, it focuses on the works of a person of color being stolen and published by a white individual who profited obscenely from them.
Now I'm going to take a left turn here because now I got to throw you off stride. So I'm going to ask you a question that wasn't in the email to prepare you for this interview. Are you ready?
Okay. Yeah, let's go for it.
All right. Is there a television show that is a guilty pleasure?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Or two.
Yeah, no, I actually love film and TV. That's another big passion of mine. But I'm a big fan of Ted Lasso. I think like most people, I love just, you know, the comedies.
Even now, I'm going to say this. I watched the first two seasons. And there's just been a lot of criticism of where the show has gone because it's gone from lighthearted comedy to more, I mean, there was a little dramedy there, but it seems that it has gotten more and more dramatic, and at least one critic. Now, mind you, I didn't watch the third season.
Well, I haven't watched all of it yet, so don't give anything away.
I won't give anything away, but let's just say that the criticism I've heard of it was it's gotten too serious.
Yeah. To be honest, I haven't watched too much of the third season yet, so I don't know that I
But the first two seasons.
The first two seasons were fantastic. Yes. And sometimes you just need that kind of like feel-good comedy.
Yes.
And another show that is actually by the writers of Ted Lasso that I recently really enjoyed. It's also on Apple Plus called Shrinking. And that stars Harrison Ford and gosh, I always forget the lead actor's name. But anyway, it's basically about mental health, and the leading characters are therapists, and it's kind of just about them going through their own struggles while also trying to help their patients. And it's funny and it's sweet, and it's also just a really interesting exploration of mental health. So really enjoyed that one. I don't know. I feel like there's so many good shows that I'm currently forgetting.
You're Apple-centric. Mythic Quest?
I couldn't get into Mythic Quest.
You're not a gamer?
I'm not a gamer. However, I am really into MCU, the Marvel character universe. So I am a big Disney Plus advocate.
Okay. So wait. This is the big test. My all-time favorite Disney Plus series so far, not The Mandalorian, not any of the MCU shows. Though I did like the one about the bow and arrow guy, the bow and arrow.
Oh, Hawkeye! Lady. Yeah, that was my favorite of.
I'd love that. Absolutely
it was
love
so
that.
Great.
But I love Andor.
Oh, okay.
Have you seen it?
I haven't. No.
No, you.
But now I'm going
are,
to.
If you are Star Wars, because what they've done is they've turned it into a thriller. So it has all the elements of a thriller with all the science fiction kind of Star Wars stuff. There's some incredible speeches there. It really shows how the character becomes part of the movement, the revolutionary movement against the Empire, and starts with the beginning. Well, not the beginning. He's in his 20s, 30s, et cetera. But that show to me, Mandalorian third season was to me not as good as the second season. The third season was just not for me. But, you know.
Well, speaking of The Mandalorian / Pedro Pascal, I, like most people, loved The Last of Us, even though I'm not a gamer.
I'm not a gamer. I'm not a zombie guy at all. I absolutely loved that series.
It was just so beautifully written and so well done. And
oh,
Pedro Pascal just really earned his... all the praise he's been getting since then.
but I love his adopted daughter even more.
Yeah, she's fantastic as well.
That was...
They did a really, really great job. And I think I heard it's been renewed for season two already. So that's excellent news.
So you could start your own podcast now on your favorite television shows.
Yeah, you know, one of the series I do on Bookmark Party is like this, watch that. So if you liked this book, I recommend you watch this movie or show. I haven't done it in a while, but now you've got me thinking, I need to bring it back.
Very good. Well, look, thank you so much, Hannah Gable, literary director of the Texas Book Festival. Also in her spare time, she runs Bookmark Party. I really appreciate you coming on Diverse Voices Book Review and sharing with us what's going on with the Texas Book Festival.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the invite, and I really enjoyed chatting with you.
Thank you for listening to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay, host and producer. The theme music is provided by Wright Productions. You can follow the show on social media. Under Facebook and Instagram, it's Diverse Voices Book Review, or Twitter under @DiverseBooksHay.